Hello and welcome to the Controller Talk podcast presented by Danfoss North America. Our goal is to bring you information about using Danfoss controls in the supermarket and warehouse industry, specifically in the US and Canada. We're doing these twice a month for now. You can catch these podcasts wherever you get your podcast, and it's available through the Danfoss Ref Tools app. For the video version, check us out on the Danfoss North America YouTube page. Search for Controller Talk to see our video collection. I'm Dave Yoder, along with Chris Brown. So Chris, you know, it's somewhere we're stuck between winter and spring right now, which makes me think about dogs going for walks and stuff like that. Sometimes you see a dog with a sweater out there, but I think there's a philosophical question here that maybe you can answer for me. Should a dog wear a sweater or just two pair of pants?
There's an answer here that's not hitting me, so what is it?
You want to pass?
Yeah.
It's a completely random answer. Some people think that it should be two pairs of pants, though. That Dimitri Martin, he thinks it's two pair of pants. He thinks, since a dog doesn't have arms, why would it wear a sweater? So, I'll let you think about that while we move on. All right.
So we need a resident comedian in here.
That's why we're here. Not just talking about controls. All right. So, this could be our last recording before we go on hiatus for the summer.
Here's the Kleenex.
Hold it together over there, will you?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. We'll come back in the fall. We'll start season three in the fall, but this could be our last one, unless we have some streak of inspiration to do another one here. But the summer and the spring and summer is going to be busy for both of us, I have a feeling.
Yep. And they're kicking us out of here, so we don't have much choice.
Well, true. Yeah. When the rent's due, you got to get out.
Yep.
Hey, we want to talk about a couple of things, parallel compression being one of them. And then before we wrap it up, we'll talk about ejectors and answer the burning question, what are ejectors and stuff like that.
Yeah, we've got the basics of the system. I think we've covered a lot of that the last 13, 14 shows here. And
yep.
These are two of the more recent changes or evolutions of the system. So I think this is a good one to end on, really.
Okay.
Yep.
So what's the purpose of parallel compression anyway? Because you can live without it, but there might be some reasons you want to incorporate it.
Yeah, people might look at it and say, I got more compressors now. Why is this, how's this helping me?
Well, we're selling compressors now.
Right. I throw a couple Bach in there and we're good to go.
Yeah.
No, the premise behind parallel compression is that if you look at a transcritical booster system for CO2, we know, last show we just talked about receivers, and we've got vapor at times, typically in the warmer months, where we've got vapor that has come out of the compressors, run through the gas cooler, did not condense in the gas cooler, and now we've got vapor sitting in our receiver that does us no good whatsoever to feed to the cases. And it typically will get bypassed back into the medium temp suction line and be compressed at whatever medium temp suction pressure we're trying to achieve. Not very efficient to do that, obviously. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind parallel compression is if we can take that vapor out of the receiver and compress it at a higher suction pressure and a smaller compression ratio, now we've been able to do less work to take that waste and vapor and push it back up to the gas cooler again to try to condense it. So parallel compressors are just that. They're a dedicated, it could be a single compressor, it could be multiple, but dedicated compressor or compressors that are really just there to handle the vapor load coming from the receiver to get it and force it back up into the gas cooler to try to condense it again.
Okay.
And it's not always a situation where it's more compressors. So when you're looking at these systems and sizing them, now we can typically downsize the medium temp compressors, whether it's going with smaller or reducing the quantity of them. So it's a little more of a shift typically where you're taking maybe a medium temp compressor or two away, and now it's becoming this dedicated parallel compressor. Where we're typically going to see similar VFD or a digital compressor so that we get some modulation there. But you'll typically see that on the parallel compressors.
Okay. All right. So another question is has to do with a receiver bypass valve.
Hmm.
And does that valve always stay open when you're doing parallel compression?
It's not going to start that way at all. The intent is you've kind of isolated that vapor out of the receiver and you're forcing it to go back to the parallel compressors. And so if the valve were to stay open, then that line between the medium temp suction and the parallel suction would be one and the same at that point. And you're not actually achieving anything. So yeah, now the general idea would be that you keep that valve closed once we've said we want the parallel compressors to kick into gear. And then what we do in the pack controllers with our receiver bypass valve is say, okay, if something were to happen, if the compressor were to fail or it's just not able to maintain the receiver pressure we want in general, and we start to reach our high PREC limit that we talked about last episode, then the gas cooler bypass valve could start to open up as a little bit of a safety so that we can do something. It makes the system inefficient, but we can try to do something before we reach that point of releasing at a safety valve or relief valve.
Okay, gotcha. All right, and so if you talk about the pack controller, how does it know when to switch from the receiver bypass valve over to parallel compression?
Yeah, you got more of a basic option here and then one that's a little more sophisticated. I've been using that word a lot here lately, but that's really what these controllers are becoming, is a lot more complicated and sophisticated. But
yep, it's usually market driven.
Yep.
That's where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking efficiency and that type of thing, then and safety, both of those, then yeah, you're going to add some layer of complexity to all of this. But yeah, the basic option for switching over from the bypass valve to parallel, you'll see in the pack controllers, it's based off of opening degree and a time delay. And these are both going to be configurable settings. And then what we're looking at there is to say that if the bypass valve has been opened at a certain point, a certain opening degree for a certain period of time, that's a good indicator that there's enough load there going across that valve for us to keep the parallel compressors to run. We don't want to short cycle them. We don't want them running with a bunch of, we don't want on off 100 times an hour or anything crazy like that. So that's the idea is, and that number could be different from one system to the next at what opening degree and time delay we want to use. But that helps to confirm that there's enough load there to keep the parallel compressor running for a good period of time. That more complicated option I was alluding to, it's called IT Smart Start. Here, the controller has a little more say on when it switches over. So it's going to use all the information it has at its available to it. And so all the pressures, receiver pressure, suction pressure, temperatures, opening degrees of these same valves we're talking about, the receiver valve, it's going to use that information and decide when a good time will be to switch over to accomplish the same thing, reduce your cycle counts on the parallel compressors, make sure we're not getting too high or too low with our receiver pressure by switching over too soon. But the smart start option will give the controller a little more say in when that switch over would happen.
So when to start the intermediate temp compressor? Is there typically more than one intermediate temp compressor, or does it just depend on the size of the system?
I think I'd say more half of the ones I've been involved in, it's just one.
Okay.
Just looking at Bitzer and what we now have with Bach and those things, it's something that the OEMs can decide on, really. A lot of times you can get one big compressor that maybe is a digital and it's got a turn down ratio where you can get it to run at a very small capacity. It's just a matter of, is that small enough to keep it running the point that we want it to? Maybe, I mean, ideally we see parallel compression operating even in the spring and fall months. If we can get enough load there, because again, it's a energy saver to use that versus the medium temp suction. So the longer we can get it to run is a good thing. And part of that's making sure you don't oversize your parallel compressor too much if you're just going with one and cutting out part of the year that it can't run because it's oversized. So yeah, there's an argument maybe going with two isn't the worst.
Yeah.
Just because you get a little more granularity with your capacity there.
And so far you're not seeing a drive on that intermediate temp compressor, are you?
Seen both. I've seen some go with a digital. I've seen VFD driven in some instances. Always one of the two though. You're never going to see just a fixed speed parallel compressor.
So obviously the pack controller can handle those options.
Yep. Yeah. It's from that standpoint, you look at it, or the pack controller looks at it, very similar to a standard low temp or medium temp suction group.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got to decide when you switch over, but a lot of the settings you're going to see for safeties and target and all those things, those are all going to be very similar structure and set up to your low temp and medium temp suction groups.
Okay. So then, when you talk about switching over to parallel compression, and making that decision, are there things that can prevent the system from doing that?
Yeah. Two settings in particular to kind of highlight here. One's, your gas cooler temperature. If that's getting down below a minimum value, that can prevent the parallel compression. It's a setting that you'll see in the pack controllers. If your SGC or your gas cooler outlet temperature, if that drops below some setting that we've defined, then that can prevent the parallel from running. That's more of a general idea that if it's that cold outside, pretty safe to say there's not enough load to keep the parallel running. So there's no point in even trying to bring it on. So that's something that can kind of lock it out. And then if the medium temp compressors are in the minus zone, or if we're below our target, below, plus neutral zone, then that's another situation where we feel like there's not enough load there. And so that should mean that there's not going to be enough load as well for the parallels to run. So that's the idea behind both of those, is trying to identify situations where there's not going to be enough load to keep the parallel running.
Okay. And then to kind of expand on that a little bit, there's options in the pack controller that have to do with AC, and AC is just what you think it is, the air conditioning.
Mm.
We haven't seen that a whole lot in the U.S. that I'm aware of, but would it disable that AC option in some of these situations?
Maybe. Like you said, haven't gotten into those. And I know globally that's a little bit more of a thing to tie the HVAC side of the system into the rack.
Yeah,
I have not dealt with any designs of that here in the U.S. to know exactly where that will come into play with the parallel side.
Maybe from it. In a year's time, we might be there.
Could be.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep. Okay.
We'll see. But yeah, I'm going to have to admit ignorance on that one.
All right. So if we start talking about other options to improve system efficiency, and we have an ejector. Danfoss sells an ejector. Comes in a few different configurations. In general, how do they work?
Idea behind an ejector is so we're tied into, let me take a step back, where it would fit into the system, if you're looking at an overall system design, is that it would take the place of the high pressure valve, so downstream from your gas cooler. So you have multiple ports on the ejector. One port is just taking that mass flow from the gas cooler, so you can typically at the highest or one of the higher pressures of the system overall. But then we have a second port that you would tie into from your medium temp suction. And so that high velocity, high pressure mass flow from the gas cooler can bring in mass flow from the medium temp suction, mix it in together, a Venturi effect, and that comes out of the ejector and feeds into the receiver, at just like the high pressure valve would. The benefit of it is we're taking that high pressure out of the gas cooler and doing work inside of the ejector to get some of that load off the medium temp suction and bypassing it right into the receiver. So, I guess it kind of gets into the next question now, mm-hmm. but that's the general idea of how they work, is you're taking some load off the medium temp suction by using the flow out of the gas cooler.
Okay. And the analogy some people use is if you're at home with your pressure washer and you hook up soap to it, it can kind of pull that high pressure, can pull some soap in to do what you want it to do.
Yeah. That's definitely an analogy that's been used.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, it's fitting. But ejectors aren't anything new in the market or in the world, I guess. They've been around for a long time. Okay. It's more of around 2014, 15, something you saw start to be worked into how a CO2 design operates.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So there is an energy saving component here, and that's why you would go to the expense of putting an ejector in.
Yeah. And so back to that point of we're now taking some of the medium temp suction off of that side of the system and bypassing it to mix in with the gas cooler pressure. So you kind of follow the flow of the system, and maybe we'll get a diagram up when we do the YouTube version of this. But when you get that, if you kind of follow the path of that mass flow coming off the medium temp suction line going through the ejector, and then we bypass it down to the receiver. All right, so now we have vapor that's sitting in the receiver. How did that help me? Because if I just have a standard system, then I've got vapor that's either going to bypass right back to the medium temp suction, or it's going to get fed down to my cases and not help me pull down to my case temp any.
Yeah.
So part of the idea is, if we're using an ejector, a vapor ejector at least, is that we also will have parallel compression as a requirement as part of the design. And so where does that energy savings come in? Now we've bypassed that medium temp suction over to the receiver without doing any work on that through the compressors. Now we can take that vapor and put it onto the parallel compressors instead of the medium temp compressors. And so it's back to a smaller compression ratio there. Now we can get our parallels to run even more than we could have without the ejector in play potentially. And so that's where the energy savings comes in, as we've kind of shifted some of the load off of the medium temp compressors, and we're now running that on the parallel compressors, and that gives us the energy savings from the smaller compression ratio.
And the intermediate temp compressors will run at a different compression ratio.
Yep.
Higher.
Yep. Yeah. So you can ballpark this, but if you're running an 18 degree suction temp, saturated suction temp on your medium temps, you could be up at 24, 28, 30, maybe even over 30 degree saturated suction temp on your parallel compressors.
Okay.
So they don't have to work nearly as hard to get to whatever discharge pressure you're running at any point in time as the medium temps do. And that's where some of your energy savings comes in.
And you're still making case temp, which is what it boils down to.
Yep. You still got that liquid in the receiver like you wanted.
Okay.
And so the ejectors actually increase how much vapor can get will get bypassed through the parallel if the system's designed properly. So adding the ejectors in, you may see even more parallel compressors than you would in a system without them. So you may be talking two or three parallel or IT compressors. To be able to, it's just because it is a good portion of that load would be vapor shifting over to the parallels in the warmer months.
Yeah. Okay. And usually anytime we talk about CO2, we start talking about geography and where your location is going to be and that sort of thing. So how does that play into all this?
Yeah. So it's back to your outside temperatures and SGC min we talked about. And if it's really cold out, then there's not a lot of load there necessarily to keep the parallels running. And you get up north, and I think this is a good piece to touch on in a second here, but the general idea is the further north you go, the less vapor you're going to see overall in your receiver if you take the whole course of the year and look at it. And so parallel compressors, ejectors, nice to have, but maybe you won't see as much benefit out of them as you would down south where it's warmer longer throughout the year and you do have that expectation of more vapor back at your receiver. I think it's not as drastic as you might expect, though. Just some of the things I've seen recently. I mean, you're talking where central parts of the central band, maybe across the country, you're still going to see majority of the months of the year where parallel compressors, again, goes back to the sizing of the compressor selection, but you can easily get a system where parallel compression ejectors are all still going to function when you get into the fall and the spring months, and not just talking about June, July, and August. Okay. So they have relevance, not just Florida, Texas, Arizona, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You can definitely go further north with them and still see double-digit energy savings out of using an ejector and parallel compressor versus without them.
Okay. All right. And what we're kind of thinking is that by this time next year, we'll have a lot more knowledge and information and runtime on ejectors that we'll be able to kind of share some lessons learned and that sort of thing.
That's the same wording that just came in mind. Maybe that's one of our episodes is,
yeah,
here's data, here's mm-hmm. proof of concepts, proof that these systems are up and running. And
yeah,
I think that would definitely be a good one for season 3.
Okay. All right. So, how about a Stump Chris question? Last time you got a softball. I can't make it that easy twice.
Can I at least get multiple choice?
I don't know. You're pretty good with numbers, so we'll see how you do. So, our ejectors come in a few different configurations. One of them is a six block. It's got six solenoids across the top of it.
All right.
You think you know that the question's going to be, but I think
I don't. I'm scared because I can't think of.
It's pretty easy. Easy but relevant. All right. So how much do you think that ejector weighs in pounds? We know that if you've ever picked one up, you say, wow, this thing's heavy. But how much does it weigh? I can give you a part number if that helps you.
I know you have this all memorized.
All right.
I even brought up a cheat sheet on ejectors, but I don't have that one on there, so that didn't do me any good.
Excellent.
I'll say 50 pounds.
You're way off.
Am I that bad?
You're way off.
Higher?
Yeah. No.
Lower?
Yeah, cut in half, like really? 24 pounds.
Okay.
That's according to the data sheet, so it might feel like it's way off if you pick it up, but they're about 24 pounds for a six block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a decent weight. So, I mean, just it's got the spots to fix it to the rack. Mm-hmm. Definitely make sure you do that. Yeah, you don't just want to have the thing hanging loose.
Don't just tie wrap it to the rack and hope for the best.
Yeah, that won't work out too well.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who wants to buy one, it's part number 032F5677.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice keepsake at the house.
Yeah. They make a great gift. All right. So, no listener mail this time around, but I'm sure we'll get some over the summer. And hey, we can answer them anytime they pop in. But if you'd like to drop us an email with a suggestion for topics to cover, we're going to build a bank of these for season three. Or if you have a comment or anything like that, then just email us at controllertalknorthamerica@danfoss.com. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on this podcast. And I think there's a good chance we're on hiatus until the fall, but we'll be back for season three, and we'll mix all kinds of interesting stuff together.
Need for an emergency podcast. We'll see what happens in between now and then.
That's right. Never know what the listeners are going to ask for.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for listening. Our audio engineer is Raul Garcia, and Maria and the new guy, Josh. He's still the new guy. Our behind-the-scenes making it happen once again for Season 2. Until next time, for Chris Brown, I'm Dave Yoder. Stay cool.